Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, founder of Zambezi Zero, Bastian Den Braber.
Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Jimmy Pearson. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
A short while back, I was invited to an event that was organized by a wonderful community leader. It was actually not for this person's community per se, but for this person's friends, of which I am one. And it happens to be that all this person's friends are all community leaders themselves. And so it was a really wonderful thing to be gathered, not only to be in each other's company, in the company of peers, and understanding some of the fun and exciting things that we're all doing and the exalting moments that we've had and the trials and tribulations, the hopes and the fears and the dreams of being in community and creating community and being a community leader. Several things occurred to me that I have not stopped thinking about since. And I have shared with some of them and am thinking of ways to ameliorate the situation for all concerned and for many others. And this conversation, it made me think of this because this is the kind of conversation on another level that needs to be had globally and within small communities, medium size, as we go forward, I believe. So what happened was I found that a few community leaders were doing things that some of us had never thought about, which is great because then we could incorporate them and all that, and vice versa. So great. That was great. And so getting together helped serve that and make us all better, right? Also found out that some of us were in need, and in some cases desperate need, for certain things or certain ways of doing things or some support in this area or that area. And I was sorry to see that in some cases I was that person who could have helped and had not, because I did not know the questions to ask or wasn't involved in those aspects, or the person didn't know how to ask. So that was the thing that really got me, that there are so many people, thankfully, that's the good news, that are doing so many good things out there for whether it's their families, their communities, their town, their city, their state, the world, the planet. And a lot of the people that are entering into that space of doing that are people that are called to that, but don't necessarily know how, in the sense that they come from different organizations, or they were raising a family, or they were starting a business, and then so they don't necessarily know, but they know that they're called and they're out there doing it. So they might not know how to ask, they don't know who to talk to, or they think they might need to do it themselves, or they're supposed to do it themselves, or they can do it better themselves. So all of these things that make a situation where so much needs to be done, as we are all starting to see, and we may need support, and potentially there's support out there, but we're either not talking or we don't have the means to know the information. And this is a conversation like that, except this is on the global scale, one that we all want to be paying attention to, and that could potentially serve us not only just for the planet, but also in our communities as we grow together.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We're always talking about technology, and there's, you know, big debates about AI and the ethics and a lot of, you know, what's been expanding in machine learning. But tonight's conversation is going to highlight the fact that when you point innovation in the right directions, you can make a massive impact very quickly.
And so we've titled this episode, How Superintelligence is Protecting the Biosphere. So it's going to be about so many things, but because our founder, our interview guest is the founder of Zambezi Zero, established to put superintelligence in the hands of everyone in the biosphere sustainability. Bastian Den Braber, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for that beautiful introduction.
Well, you certainly inspired this, and it gave me hope. And you are actually one of these people that were doing something completely different in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Before this. And what was that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spent 15 years of my professional career in management consulting, working mostly for telecom clients all over the world. Very different beast.
And so it would seem that it doesn't fit into the world that we're going to be talking about in a moment. And yet it actually is one of the most beautiful things to have you in this world. Why?
So I firmly believe that, you know, every journey, every development in life you go through has its purpose in your life. And, you know, while I was in that career, and I definitely wasn't working on this, I was traveling globally, working globally. I had the means to travel personally. I spent more than 20 years traveling most places in sub-Saharan Africa. And you know, back in 2009, when I gifted myself a 3-month like mini sabbatical, that's where, you know, standing in the dusty sands in the African bush, purpose hit me in the face, right? And so I can point to that 15-year career for allowing me to have that experience and being there and allowing your purpose to find me.
So I think it's interesting because so many of us have thought, well, I don't know anything about that, or I'm not the one to do that. And was there ever a doubt, or did you put the pieces together right away?
That's a great question, because I think at the time I was going through like a shocking experience, right? I'm standing there in the bush, I'm gifted myself a training as a safari field guide, and we're doing foot patrol early in the morning, and there's this clearing and there's a dead rhino. Shot to pieces, head is chopped off, horns are gone. So humans poached it, and we're standing there with a group of like 20 people. People are crying, we're throwing up. It's like, to me and everybody else, just gets to your core. And that's a moment you can't really ignore, right? So it started raising questions like, oh, wow, like, what does this mean for me? And that put that training that, you know, it's 28 days in the bush, unfenced, learning about 22 different topics in the bush, really as entry level to become a field guide trainer, was really like, okay, well, does that mean I am now going to stay here in the bush and become a game ranger to kind of be on the forefront of fighting this? Or am I going to leverage my educations, my global career, and all the access and the networks that I have built up over the years and use that investment, if you will, for something bigger? And I decided for the latter, but I had no clue what that was. So I went back to my consulting career afterwards, and it took 9 more years for it to click and all come together.
Wow. Wow. Nine more years.
Yeah.
And in the process, you're going through what is normal life, or at least your version of normal life. And you're doing what you think you're supposed to be doing, which potentially is what you're supposed to be doing. So you weren't necessarily on the wrong path. It was the path.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to always, you know, looking in hindsight to go back and put the pieces of the puzzle together, and like, what decisions did I make in life, personally, professionally, and relationships and trips and, you know, and jobs? And then what was their role in this sequence of events that leads to where I am today? And there's a whole string of these major events and decisions and choices that if you take one out of the equation, the rest wouldn't have happened, right? So I was fascinated about, you know, looking back, but then also reflecting forward. It's like, I have no idea what the sequence of events going forward is going to be.
Mm.
All I know now at this point that because of that event in 2009 and that really my vision coming together, coming to me in 2018, I now have a flag on the horizon. But I don't know what the path is exactly, or let alone it being a straight path.
Well, since you mentioned it, I feel like there's a personal interest story here. I am curious, how does a romantic relationship lead to finding your life's purpose?
Well, it was in 2013. I was already in a relationship, and I was working at our consulting office in Dubai at the time. And I decided I was going to move to Los Angeles with the company for and change in the same job, but just different office and different market, to shake those things up, and also to be in that relationship. My partner at the time was based in Los Angeles. So I put two and two together, and I moved to LA to go for the consulting office here. And that brought me to LA. And that's one of those pivotal moments. Had I not done that, I later leave that job as well, and basically walk into the tech startup ecosystem here in LA on the West Coast, I wouldn't have been in my first startup. I wouldn't have joined a venture capital firm as an advisor. I wouldn't have been an advisor to a dozen other startups. So there's this whole, it's like actually a pivotal moment in my life, which opened up the door to these other attributes of tech entrepreneurship and venture capitalism that is now part of my playbook that otherwise wouldn't have been.
So we all may be on a pivotal moment that someday, for those of us who will talk about this or will use this in our lives, we may look back to this moment and say that was a pivotal moment in our life. We don't know, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
For example, you went to Burning Man. Did you know that was going to have an effect on you like it did?
I had no idea. there was a sequence of events the year before leading up to that.
Not another sequence of events.
Yeah. Isn't life a sequence of events?
Right.
I'm not sure it's a linear sequence, though. It could be more like quantum computing, where time and space and everything is all happening at the same time. I left along that relationship that brought me to LA. I left that in 2017. And then I started connecting with friends here in the burner community in LA, and I went to Africa Burn early 2018, and then to the Big Burn in Nevada also in 2018. And it was just a conversation with mutual friends of Mark and I, and I basically just splurged out the vision for what Zimbisi was going to become. It just came out of my guts, basically, in a conversation.
Wow. Okay, so I you had such a great answer. So I know that your company is Zimbisi, and then there's Zimbisi Zero. And I asked you, what is the significance of zero? And you said,
we want all of the bad things to be absolutely zero. Zero pollution, zero poaching, zero trafficking, zero money laundering, zero human wildlife conflicts. You can keep going.
Wow. Okay, so since we're here, tell us the vision that it sounds like you had as during that Burning Man experience, but that has grown obviously since, and here we are. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, that vision was very comprehensive, and was basically five different business models altogether. And over the years, I zoomed in, okay, what's the one thing that I can do really well? And that will make the most impact. And it's really taking the approach that we do to disrupt markets with tech companies, is applying technology, entrepreneurship, and investment to a problem. And then when you apply that to a problem, then see what comes out, which is really like, okay, how are we going to disrupt a market, right? And because African wildlife conservation is so deeply passionate to me, that's what I applied it to. And then I realized, like, we're trying to solve a problem at a global scale. And even just in Africa, there are 8,400 protected areas which is a massive problem at a massive scale. In every dimension you look at those 8,400 protected areas. And like, none of what we're doing right now is solving the problem, because one, there is not good enough use for technology. And two, it's not really entrepreneurship and investment, it's nonprofit model approaches. And that is the core of the problem of not being able to scale it, because most nonprofits don't use technology, and not a lot. And when you start using technology, the only way technology scales is by making investments in it. And nonprofits don't make investments that way, right? Nonprofit models are not scalable. So that was the core of the problem that had to change. And that was really the core of what I'm doing with SMBC Zero, which is a for-profit company that is developing an end-to-end technology solution. We're focusing on the core of that, an AI and IoT platform that is extremely scalable, and that we can deploy at those 8,400 projects in Africa.
And that's just Africa?
That's just Africa, yeah. I need to start somewhere.
No, but, right, because what I'm getting at is that you're looking at like a multi-billion dollar market by 2030, right?
Yeah, the numbers are insane. I've gone through every single report from the World Environmental Facility, the United Nations, the World Bank, and all of these reports. It's a $900 billion market by 2030, only for AI and IoT technology in the four sustainable development goals that I focus on. So it's enormous. And this is real money. The WEF just put out a funding program like a month ago for $1.1 billion. To fund projects specifically like these. Like, it's real money, and that funding is supporting the scale. Now what they need is, you know, the ability to deploy those that kind of capital.
So before we go to a break and then we come back and talk more about what it looks like on the ground and potentially what people can do, I had what I thought was an interesting question that might be raised by some people saying, well, these are nonprofits, a lot of them. What do you mean people are going to be making billions of dollars off of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that's the paradigm shift that we need to take a look at. And I think if there's one big takeaway from this conversation today, is that there is a different paradigm than thinking about anything that has to do with sustainable development goals is nonprofits. It's already a market of hundreds of billions, depending on which sustainable development goal you look at. You know, it's the stock market is supported by these frameworks as well, with the ESG frameworks. Sustainable cities is part of sustainable development goals, and that's a ginormous market. So it depends how you look at it. Who the payer is and who the user is. And often the payer and the user is a corporation. Let's say in Africa, there could be a company that is a soda manufacturer, has a big factory, has a lot of labor forces, uses a lot of natural resources, has a huge pollution potential. They need something to track and trace what they're actually doing, rather than guessing what they're doing or just working off of hypothesis.
Interesting. And there, you had given me so many more examples. I'm trying to remember. I don't see your website here. What's the website for?
Yeah, it's zambezi-zero.com.
Okay. We'll need to get that on the site. So zambezi-zero.com, and Zambezi is Zambezi, and then the dash zero, Z-E-R-O, just like it sounds.com. Well, we're going to be getting to talk a little bit more with Sebastian Den Braber when we come back with this fascinating conversation that is very timely. And we'll also have our Ask Dorothy segment a little later, and then we'll be joined by performance guest Jimmy Pearson live here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, and we're having a fascinating conversation with our guest here today, who is founder of Zambezi Zero, which was established, is established to put super intelligence in the hands of everyone in biosphere sustainability. Bastian Den Braber is our guest. And Bastian, super intelligence refers to?
It's kind of an audacious term, huh? Basically, it refers to being able to develop the intelligence that is deployable at the scale that we talked about, let's say 8,400 protected areas in sub-Saharan Africa alone. And the way to get there is, as you do with AI, is you train the model, and you train the model by deploying on an X amount of projects and extracting the intelligence from those projects, not per se the data, but the intelligence. And each incremental project only has so much more added value to that intelligence till the diminishing curve starts to kick in. And at that point, we can roll it out at an infinite amount of projects without those new projects that don't necessarily have the original resources and the historical data and everything to develop or use AI, can now start using this intelligence. And that's really where the scalability comes from.
And before we get into a couple specifics about that, the biosphere sustainability, who is in biosphere sustainability, or are we all?
Well, we are all. And actually, if you look at the, it originates from the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal model, which has 17 of those goals. And each goal is broken down in like 5, 6, 7 different targets.
Okay, so we're not going to get into that right now, but let's do get specific about the rhino you told us about at the beginning of the show. How can, for example, technology support that? Support having the rhino lived kind of thing?
Yeah, let's make it very tangible. The thing with the rhino is that it has an area where it lives, and the area needs to be safe from humans that want to take its horns, right? So there is a way to track the rhino. There's a way to track humans that shouldn't be there, and there's a way to track humans that should be there. And there are lots of different ways to do that. And by using an array of different sensors that are out in the land and flying overhead, bring the data together, and then running real-time predictive analytics over the data, they give much smarter actions by the leaders on the ground to prevent that rhino being poached.
So I think the problem is bigger than we realize. This conversation opened my mind to the different possibilities. We could also be saving trees, saving forests, mm-hmm. right? Saving like every single thing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything is measurable. Everything is, we can have oversight on. And The key thing, really, what it always comes down to is you want to be preventative rather than reactive.
Mm.
And that's where the intelligence comes in, right? So collecting historic data, running real-time predictive analytics, say, okay, well, if we need to do something to prevent a fire from breaking out, or we need to preemptively, you know, make sure there's enough water in certain places, or, you know, there seems to be an interest in poaching, you know, the trees. You know, some of the wood that we like to use a lot in the United States is actually poached from a lot of places in Africa. That's we can all monitor that in a very uninvasive way.
You are inviting us to look at conservation and sustainability and nonprofits and the doing of the good in a different way, as you have already mentioned. What else can we do, or what other paradigms need to shift potentially that you could help focus us on in this moment?
Yeah, I think so. The paradigm shift are really, not considering that solving these biosphere problems, like you said, that we're all living in, is going to be resolved by nonprofits and NGOs, right? Although they do great work, and there is a perception, and there is maybe an ease in believing that they're able to solve it all at scale, but that's not their business model, right? So, I think the paradigm shift is absolutely critical, and then also, you know, depending on the ability and the means available, it's to support and maybe look out for working in one way or the other with companies like myself and other startups that are really doing groundbreaking work to come with solutions that are highly scalable and that can really address problems all over the world.
You know, it reminds me of the simple, like picking up trash, like the commercial we heard about cleaning up the beaches, like picking up a piece of paper. Like we might think, who did that and who would do that? Or we might think, well, somebody's going to pick that up, or that's not my job. And it may not be. But if we are living here, like in this moment, we are all here on this planet, it almost everything seems to become our job, with, or at least be part of our awareness within limits. I'm not saying pick up every piece of trash, but like you were saying earlier, where can you be most effective with what you have gained on the way to this moment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like everybody's somewhere else on their journey, right? Back to the original start. Everybody's on a journey. Everybody has different means and different opportunities. And I think that's what we're really addressing right now, is sort of that consciousness. Like, how can I live a life that contributes, right? And how can I live a life of purpose? And, maybe that's the biggest service that everybody can do to themselves and their friends and family in the world, is like, what is your purpose for being here? Which is by definition bigger than yourself. And typically not something purely financial, but something for the better of other people and the planet.
So you said a couple of funny things on the way to that, actually, in finding purpose. Do you remember what they were? Because I do.
Replay.
Well, one of them had to do with it on our way to finding our purpose. It's probably not what we're doing now, right?
Yeah. Let's be real. Most people, I think it's the biggest challenge in life that every human has, is finding a purpose. And I think the reality is that most people haven't found it yet, right? It's also the biggest challenge that everybody has. So very likely it's not what you're doing today. So the question is then, what is it?
And so some of this is tough. And I bring this up because you work with large corporations or leaders that are head of a lot of different things, or big money funds, etc. These people, do they have to worry about a purpose, or they're just living what they think is their best life?
I mean, isn't it great if you can live your best life? And the purpose doesn't need to be that big, right? purpose could be like what you said. It's like I go to the beach and I pick up stuff if that's within my means and my capabilities. That's great. More people need to do that. But I think it's you can make it as big as you want, as big as it needs to be.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I asked you earlier, and then I kind of asked you now, and you gave me the same answer. And I'm impressed by that. When I said, what can people do to support you? And you said, and what you're doing, your organization, and you said they could look at who they can support. And it could be you, but just to open up that, break that paradigm as well, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be somebody clear across the world, or it doesn't have to be that big lofty thing, which is important, but maybe there's something right in front of us, and you're turning the conversation in such a beautiful way.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, some of these problems, especially these biosphere problems, and you know, it's easy to tap into things like climate change. They're so large and overwhelming, and like how can, you know, one human make a difference in those big things? And I think it really comes down to just doing what's within your sphere, right? Within your realm of doing, that already makes a contribution, because the simple math is there are 8 billion of us. So 8 billion people doing small things is already huge.
Wow. Right? Yeah. And, you know, before we close, at the beginning of our conversation earlier today, you and I, before the show, you were saying how part of the problem or what is needed is easy and not expensive, but people within the communities that are doing this don't know about it. Then part of it is expensive, or it takes more technology or something. So talk to us about that, because I think this applies also to our communities, or what each 8 billion person can do.
Say that again. What exactly in terms of the cost aspect of things?
So we were talking about at the time 8,400, and what was needed. And you said the first part is they just need this or that, and that's not too expensive and it's not too hard to do. But they don't even know it's available to them, right?
Right.
And the second part is expensive and more technical, but there is something that can be done right away. So let's talk to that.
Yeah. So it's a really great point, because out of those 8,400 protected areas, you know, there's a handful that have all the resource, not all the resource, but they're relatively well equipped and financed, and they have big international supports and donors. But those are kind of like flagship projects. Most of those 8,400 projects don't have that, and they're struggling to have rubber boots or overalls or modern weapons or proper training or proper nutrition and housing, etc. And those things are relatively easy to solve for. And the moment it's like Maslow's pyramid, the moment we take care of that layer, which is very straightforward, we can start adding on more things that can make their life better, more efficient, make them a lot more effective, and really start to getting where we need to be, is zero of any of these issues that we're trying to resolve.
Thank you for doubling down on that, because sometimes, like, if we throw the other stuff at it, but those needs are not met yet, then potentially it doesn't serve as well as it can, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's also, you know, so we need to take care of that foundation. And then once the moment we start adding tech, you also start needing other kinds of training and other resources. You know, if you do real-time predictive analytics, what we talked about before, let's say protecting a rhino, and you see something that's about to happen, then you also need to be able to deploy resources at that problem in real time, right? Mm. And most organizations aren't set up for that. That's a different kind of team that does those kind of things. So it's all about approaching these things end to end with an holistic approach, coming with an end to end solution that also includes what you do with the communities, what you do with local resource that can be leveraged. You know, we're talking about driving, enabling like economic prosperity in the wider area. And there's a big word for this that has come to me several times over the last couple of weeks, which is bioregional. Mm. So rather than looking at a project, at a problem in isolation, especially when we're talking about biosphere, it's never in isolation, right? A river runs through, you know, the Zambezi River runs through 5 countries. A drought is usually caused by ocean currents on the other side of the planet that is triggering weather patterns that cause a drought somewhere else. So it's really important to look at these problems not in isolation, but in their wider context of everything else that's happening with cities and agriculture, production, anything that's happening in those vicinities, to make sure that the ecosystem is thriving, because then there's less extractive focus on the biosphere.
Wow. Such a big conversation. And I feel like this was a teaser on so many of the different topics and inspirational at the same time. I'm so glad you're in this space. I'm so glad you have been with us here to share. I want to give the website out again, which is Zambezi-Zero, spelled out, Zambezi-Zero.com. And we have several other links to Bastian's organization and to him directly, so you could follow him and learn more. Bastian, is there anything else you want to add to the conversation real quickly before we go?
I would just like to call out Wildest Life organization that are my friends and I've worked with over the years to really understand all of this. They've opened up doors wide open for me to learn about all of this and to be able to, you know, build what I'm building now. We should share their link too. We'll do that afterwards. They're on my Facebook. I just did a fundraiser for my birthday. I'd highly recommend checking them out. That's the easiest thing that anybody in the world can make a small step towards helping this big problem.
Very good. Do share that link with us and then we'll post as well. So Bastian, thank you so much. I want to remind everybody, Bastian and Braber has been our guest on this, our episode 798, How Superintelligence is Protecting the Biosphere. Thank you to our guest. Thank you, Bastian.
Thank you. Thank you. Love being here.
What a pleasure. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Aileen, and I am trying so hard to be successful as a healer. Years ago, a psychic told me that I would be very successful once I embraced my healing skills. I've had great results with my clients, and their health has improved dramatically. However, I haven't succeeded in successfully earning enough money to quit my day job. What am I doing wrong?
My dear Aileen, before one can reach great success, one must define what that would mean. From your question, I discern that you have been successful as a healer and that you are defining your lack of success as a financial one. So let's look at what your two goals are. Are they about healing others, or are they about earning lots of money? The amazing Dee Wallace quoted Albert Einstein's view of success, and he said this: strive not to be a success, but rather to be of value. Dee then said, and when your intention is to be of value, the universe responds with success because you're driven by love and purpose. The universe always responds to those qualities. I totally agree with this, and I trust that you will be willing to examine your goals, and if you see that a shift of consciousness in which you see the value of your intentions to be a great healer, and if you become grateful for your success as a healer, I believe that your finances will improve. I look forward to hearing of your continued success and of more money coming to you.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest, who will be performing live for us here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition, Jimmy Pearson, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to dorothydonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back, and our performance guest is a singer, a songwriter, a multi-instrumentalist. He's a music producer. He is Jim Pearson. Jim, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Filippo.
It's great to have you, especially for this show, because speaking about community building, we got to know you through Nick Spano, who we just had on the show last week.
Yeah.
Recreation or Recreation Cafe.
That's right.
All about community, right?
Absolutely. The whole Recreation Cafe was just founded on ideas that were all these events that were being thrown that circled around immunity through the community through the idea of play. So it's all boiled into this awesome cafe that we're, you know, live music, live painting, and all the above. So yeah, grateful to have that connection to you guys through Nick.
So I know that the motto there is keep playing. And in your case, not just playing, but playing music. You play music there and everywhere you can, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't feel I've gone through my time, I think, in life without music. And I think I've been in that phase recently where if I'm not on a stage, I'm not feeling too at home. So. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of time without music, you too have had your experiences here and there, and each of those have served, enlightened, or reminded you of what you want or don't want, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things for me was... I think I'm always going through these phases in life, you know, where I'm interested in what the next thing is that I can learn and how that might apply to whatever it is that I want to do here in this world, which I think ultimately is create experiences, moments of, to lean on other themes of today's episode, moments of value that people can have and hold and do with what they want. Hopefully it's influential into the choices that they're making going forward in a positive way. But all you can do is provide the experience and see who comes, you know? And so in a lot of that journey, I was taken to Kauai for 9 months and lived out there and was in this deep journey of different energy work modalities. So Reiki, and I was just anything that I could learn in that world, I wanted it. I was so convinced of these ideas of healing yourself through energy work. And I found so much that changed my life in that world. But what it all led back to for me is, how can I take these ideas and put them into my music? And it doesn't have to be lyrically necessarily. It has to, how can I bring this idea and this energy into my music? How can my performance be a healing experience for myself and subsequently those who are with me in that experience?
Well, we're going to get to experience that now. And what's exciting about this is, not only are you going to play live for us and our audience, you are going to play songs that are not yet recorded, not yet released. So these are world premieres. And I can't wait. We didn't get a chance to chat about it before, but I can't wait to find out what Solve M is about. Is it about problems?
Hey, it certainly is. Yes, it's really about, I think, less of the problems themselves and more that, hey, look, we all have them. And I think there becomes this moment in everybody's life adventure where they kind of say, okay, I got a lot of things to look at, but maybe I don't exactly know what to do with any of that right now, that kind of first step. And I think that that's really what this song is about, is solving the problems or not, as the case may be.
Well, I can't wait to hear it. So this is the first time for all of us. Normally, I've actually heard the songs, or one of our producers have, so nobody has heard this. Here is our performance guest performing live like never before, Jim Pearson and his brand new song, Solve 'Em.
Cards to fall. I'm still waiting on my sorry soul to be whole. Is the love left around? I located all the problems, but I just don't know how to solve them. Pretty girls want a guy with a Lexus, six figures and a house in Texas. Pretty boys want a chick on the side, $100,000 ride and a twinkle in their eyes. Meaning the sex makes space for rumination. The holy left requires further examination. What we fill it with is never a vacation, and still we choose it every time. Where does it come to? Hard to recognize anymore. Everyone out there, everyone fighting. I don't accept you all the way up and short. Hard to believe it there's still. Is the love left around? I'm still waiting on the cards to fall. I'm still waiting on my sorry soul to be whole. Is the love left around? I located all the problems, I just don't know how to solve them. If I could be part of the evidence that each one of us is wrapped like an heaven sent gift to the world, and every single soul is relevant, no matter what you have against us. Every girl needs a heart made of gold now. Eyes are made of diamonds like a window to your soul. Hold on to your intention if you wanna be yeah. It's the love left around. I'm still waiting on the cards to fall. I'm still waiting on my sorry soul to be old. It's the love left around. I've located all the problems. I just don't know how to solve them, how to solve them. How to solve. I just don't know how to solve.
Jimmy Pearson, thank you so much. Jimmy Pearson is spelled J-I-M-M-Y-P-E-A-R-S-O-N. As a matter of fact, you can find him at jimmypearson.com or on Instagram, Jimmy Pearson Official. Jimmy, you're not from here, are you?
No, I grew up actually in Northern Ohio, Oberlin, Ohio.
And what was here?
Well, when I was 17 years old, I was actually in college, best 3 months of my life.
wait, your whole college experience was 3 months?
Yeah.
And you got your degree in 3 months. That's pretty impressive. Okay,
yeah, well, don't we wish? Yeah.
Well, you got a degree, obviously.
I learned something for sure.
Right, there you go.
But while I was there, I was kind of realizing I'd gone there to study theater, and I wanted to be an actor in films and whatnot. And I started realizing that people liked my music that I was writing. And this guy scouted me. He was working for a music magazine out here. And he found me, and somehow we just became friends. And he said, listen, man, if you ever get to California, I'll help you however I can in music. And I thought, okay, well, that's all I want now. So 6 years later, I was out here, and he became a good friend of mine, and we started working on music and doing the thing, as one might say. And it was at one of his concerts, actually, that I met Nick Spano. Nick used to be his landlord once upon a time.
Oh, wow.
And so that was how that whole journey came about. So I think I came out here originally with an idea of an artist that I wanted to be. And after being here and experiencing all that I've experienced, I think I've discovered all that I am capable of. Or not all, not that, but that I am capable of so much more than that thing I had decided I was going to be when I came here.
Wow. Yeah. And actually, so I'm hearing messages, and I'm hearing awarenesses, I'm hearing a purpose in all of this, and you're putting it in your music, and people are starting to not only they dig it, but they're also starting to get something that maybe they haven't gotten enough from music lately.
I like that. And I, you know, hopefully that's the case. You know, I see a lot of artists making some of those shifts, putting more, and I don't know, it's and awareness is so huge. I don't know that it's not about positivity. It's not about being positive or spreading a positive message. I think it's about spreading the message of be truthful of who you are, be truthful to yourself. Don't deny your passions, right? And these messages, I think, the more truthful we can be in our music, the more that's going to reach, the more that's going to bleed through. I feel like we're in the existential equivalent of the 70s. I want that 70s energy back in music, you know?
Interesting. Well, it talk about revealing truth. This next song is called Mistakes, another song that none of us have heard. So I don't know if you're going to be revealing some mistakes and then I did this, or if this is just in general. Is there anything you want to share before we get to hear it?
Well, yes. So this song is actually about, and so going back to not just community, but the relationships that we form, I think how important it is to have what we have and to think about. A lot of people get focused on their problems, I think, as I sang about in the last song. And getting focused on those problems, I think, we kind of lose sight of what we're actually creating and what every mistake we made actually led us to, and that we're actually right here where we want to be, believe it or not.
Wow. Well, I'm right here where I want to be at this moment, and I want to hear this song. Here is Jimmy Pearson and his new song that nobody's heard, not even any of us, called Mistakes, here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition Live.
First mistakes ain't hard to make, but damn it, do they hurt? So you shake it off and wipe the blood and rub it with some dirt. Second time you think you're fine, but that just ain't the truth. And the blood comes rushing back to that once forgotten wound. So I screamed and shouted for someone's help and got angry with myself too. But I can't be mad, 'cause the mistakes I've had all led me here. Some mistakes feel unforgivable without somebody's help. Do you realize you just need to find forgiveness in yourself and the answers to the questions that you're working hard to find? And never in the words, but in the actions that they hide. So I screamed and shouted for someone's help and got angry with myself too. But I can't be mad, 'cause the mistakes I've had all led me. They all led me here to you. They all led me here to you. Oh, they all led me here to you. They all led me here to you. Yeah. First mistakes ain't hard to make, from them we can learn. Instead of simply driving straight, we might grab the wheel and turn. Avoiding one collision means another's yet to come. I'll be right here navigating next to you when all is done. I won't scream and shout for anyone's help or get angry with myself too. Yeah, can't be mad, 'cause the mistakes I've had all led me here. They all led me here to you. They all led me here to you. They all led me here to you. Oh, they all led me here to you.
And there it is, Jimmy Pearson, Jimmy, JimmyPearson.com, and find him on Instagram at Jimmy Pearson Official. Jimmy, when are you releasing that song? And will you let us know so we can share it?
Yes, absolutely. I have no plans on that at the moment. I started working on, I know, I started working on the recording of it, and I've just gotten sidetracked with a million other projects. And so I'm figuring, you know, it'll come when it comes and it'll be ready when it's ready.
Well, obviously, and it'll be no mistake when it comes out and we'll all get to enjoy it. But in the meantime, we got to enjoy this unplugged version before anybody else. Thank you for sharing that and your stories with us and your previous song. Thank you.
Of course. And thank you so much for having me. You have a great, great night.
Jimmy, it's a pleasure. What a great experience. Jimmy Pearson, a big thank you to you. And then another big thank you to our interview guest, Bastian Den Braber. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.